Hallo und willkommen zu Gegenpressing, der Bundesliga-Podcast. Es ist die Champions League Reaction Show. I'm Manu Feti, Stefan Bienkowski. This is historic, Stefan. Borussia Dortmund have done it. They've reached the Champions League final. They beat PSG 1-0 in Paris after beating them at home as well 1-0. Enough to reach the final. I think this was PSG 0. The post a gazillion, because that's how often it felt like PSG hit the post or the woodwork. This is a great moment. Let's be honest here for Borussia Dortmund. The fact that they are now going to play at Wembley, where they 10 years ago lost the final to Bayern Munich, and I mean, we get to talk maybe about that tomorrow, but Bayern Munich could be the potential opponent. Of course, at Wembley once again. Redemption arc maybe as well, because you know this could be a final. This final will be Marco Reus's last game at Borussia Dortmund, so he could actually walk away with the biggest of all trophies in club football. So much to talk about. Let's start with the game. I feel like I watched the 90 minutes, and throughout the 90 minutes, I never felt really in doubt that Dortmund were going to pull this off, even when PSG hit the posts. It's just the way that they were playing it, the manner they were playing it, and how calm they stayed throughout the entire game. It just kind of felt like it was destiny in some ways.
Yeah, it definitely felt a little predetermined. I'm sure PSG fans are probably thinking that right now, that there's some higher force that stopped them from sticking the ball in the back of the net. But no, actually, I think I agree with you. You know, even Terzic stuck with the same start 11 that he did in the first leg. Stuck with the exact same tactics, and it felt to me like a game that more or less played out almost the exact same way as the first leg. PSG just kind of almost carelessly moved forward into the Dortmund half. They made some chance. They obviously created plenty of chances, but they did so in a kind of cavalier style that allowed Dortmund to kind of not only counterattack quite well, but also keep the ball for large chunks of the game. Maybe not so much as they did in the first leg, especially in the second half when Adeyemi went off and Jadon Sancho went off. But at least in that first half, Dortmund were so comfortable because, and we talked about this after the first leg, in the way that PSG just didn't seem to have any interest in trying to pin Dortmund back. Yes, they tried to create chances. Yes, they had a number of chances in the Dortmund half, but that back line never really seemed too interested in staying tight to Julian Brandt, Adeyemi, Jadon Sancho, who I all thought had outstanding games. I think Julian Brandt obviously Mats Hummels is probably the man of the match for scoring the goal, but I thought this was one of Julian Brandt's best ever performances for Dortmund, because not only did he link up so well with Füllkrug and the other two wingers, but PSG just couldn't get near him. Either they couldn't or they simply didn't want to, and it just struck me as this kind of, and you know, we talk about everyone kind of pokes fun of the fact that PSG kind of always seem to get to this point in Champions League and then they get a nosebleed and then they find some way to kind of slip up on the banana skin. And every time Dortmund got the ball in the PSG half and the closest PSG player was like 20 yards from him, I thought this is exactly why PSG never win the Champions League, because it's almost like they have this kind of carefree approach to what they would deem as lesser sides to them. And I just felt like PSG, I thought Dortmund did put a foot wrong across the entire game, really. For man-to-man, outstanding performances, everyone knew exactly what role they had to play in this team, in this system, and with Terzic's tactics. And yeah, PSG had the more chances, they had the higher XG, they hit the woodwork a number of times, but I actually thought performance-wise, I thought Dortmund played a lot better than PSG, and I think they undoubtedly deserve to be in the final now.
Yeah, I think the only moments when PSG really got dangerous was that last 10 to 8 minutes. And that almost felt like a hockey game when the team is a goal down and they pull the goalkeeper and they throw everything at it and it's just chaotic, but there's no real structure. It's very different than what Leverkusen, for example, do, right? Leverkusen never go into chaos mode. They still play their structured football. They still go about it in a certain way. And this PSG team was very much like, it felt very much this chaos hockey approach, balls on net, many legs, hope for the best. And obviously, you know, they created dangerous moments, but it doesn't how often does that approach really lead to goals? Not often. I mean, the history, you can go through the statistics and look it up yourself, but it doesn't actually work very well when you kind of try to throw everything but the kitchen sink at the opponent, right? There's real evidence there that when you actually keep playing the way you were, but their problem was they didn't even play with that sort of pressure and the sort of this sort of, you know, you never had the sense they were the team that was a goal down throughout this entire game. I mean, that first half, they had that shot by Dembele, right? And Dortmund did really well to keep in area, right? If you read the Henriksen interview on Gegenpressing, right, he calls it the T, which is essentially the middle of the goal, and then in front of the 6-yard box, there's an area that fans out to a T, right? Dembele is somewhere off the side, and so that shot, Dortmund were happy to give him that shot because that shot wasn't going anywhere. Like, you need to have a 1 in a million shot to put that in the net, and obviously he didn't. And there was a lot of opportunities like that for them there where, okay, the commentator raises his voice, it makes it exciting and all that, but at the end of the day, that's not something that's going to go in. And, you know, I actually thought that PSG were really lucky going into halftime not being down, because if Adeyemi hits that slightly different on that breakaway, it's 1-0 Dortmund at that point, right? And then obviously they score and make it 1-0, and then Dortmund are quite happy to give PSG all of the ball and just wait and see what they can do with it. But I never thought PSG had the sort of urgency of a team that was actually a goal down and then eventually two. Like, it just... I was watching the game with my dad, after the first half, we kind of looked at each other. I'm like, they're halfway there, and it seems so easy. And then even at one point, my dad looked at me and said, "Oh, we're already 80th minute. They only have 10 more minutes." And it kind of felt like almost like I was just like, when they played Atletico Madrid, I was really nervous to the very end, and you had that sort of sense that maybe Atletico could still turn this around. I never had that with this PSG team. Even when they started hitting the post, it's just, you just kind of sensed, okay, well, they don't have a player that's actually good enough to finish these chances. And I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the actual comparison to Atletico Madrid is actually quite interesting, because I completely agree with you. I my heart was in my throat, or my mouth, whatever the expression is, for much of that tie. And you were really fearing for Dortmund for large chunks of the game. And at times it really felt like Atletico Madrid had really rattled Dortmund. And I think the difference between that tie and the semi-final tie is that Atletico Madrid are actually very similar to Dortmund in the sense that they don't really have any star players. Of course, they've got Antoine Griezmann, who's still one of the best players in the world. But he's one of the best players in the world largely because he's an outstanding, hard-working player. And he fits into that system tremendously well. And Dortmund basically went toe-to-toe with another defensive, hard-working side. And at times they came up second best. And, you know, especially in that first leg, you kind of wondered whether they'd be able to kind of overcome them in the second leg. PSG were completely different beasts and one that ultimately didn't really compare, to be honest with you. The match was a constant procession of PSG just kind of farming the ball out to Mbappe on the left, Dembele on the right, and saying, okay, you guys go do something. You go win the game for us. You go do something magical. And yeah, of course, these guys can do that. Of course, Kylian Mbappe has shown numerous times how he's capable of kind of creating something out of nothing. But more often than not, he was on the sideline tussling with Ryerson, who I thought had another outstanding game. And thought Matson did as well for Dembele, against Dembele. And of course, the way that Dortmund played is they often doubled up on both players. And actually, I think probably PSG's ineffectiveness probably was best summed up by both fullbacks, Nuno Mendes and Hakimi, I thought offered very little in this game. And those are exactly the kind of players in those positions where if both your wingers are being doubled up by a defensive team, you need your fullbacks to be the difference makers. And it just felt to me like no one in that PSG team had any interest in stepping up. And I don't think that's because of individual players. I think it's because they didn't have a system that they could have relied on, much like Dortmund did. And that's, I think, ultimately what it comes down to. You know, PSG, man for man, obviously have better players. I think I tallied up during the game that Dortmund's entire start to 11 had cost less than transfer, or €6 million more in transfer fees than PSG paid for Kylian Mbappe alone, which kind of shows the scale of the two kind of sporting operations here. But it was just a really well-drilled team with no ego and no stars. up against a team with the biggest star in the world, and that team have long become reliant on just giving him the ball and hoping that he'll score the goal and win the game. And as we've seen from PSG time and time again in the Champions League, you need more at this level. You have to be, yes, of course, the best teams have the star players and the system and they work well, and that's when they can become these incredible unbeaten machines. But PSG might have the stars, but they don't have the system. And that's why I think they fell apart against against Dortmund tonight.
I mean, Nuno Mendes, the one thing that I think is so striking about the way Dortmund played this, and you mentioned this, is that they were able to, on both flanks, double up and had the attacking player doing the work to help the defensive player, right? And I have no idea what happened with Jadon Sancho at Manchester United. I understand that maybe he doesn't have the acceleration to be successful with a team like Manchester United, or maybe they thought they were getting a different player, or maybe, you know, I don't understand what went wrong there. But at the end of the day, this is a player that for the entire time he was on the pitch today, not only made Nuno Mendes look like an amateur footballer Nuno Mendes tried to defend him, but he also made him look like an amateur footballer when Nuno Mendes was attacking. He put in a very, very strong defensive shift and doesn't look like a player at all who was not willing to put in the work at Manchester United, which, you know, raises all sorts of questions to me, whatever they're doing there. It can't be good. But, you know, at the end of the day, I find it fascinating that you had that on the one flank and then you had the same thing on the other flank with Riasson, right, who I thought, you know, played a tremendous game as well. Ran probably 100 kilometers in this match. It's unbelievable. Karim Adeyemi was completely exhausted when he came off, right? And I actually thought, you know, they robbed themselves a little bit of pace there, but I don't think they had much of a choice at that stage, because I don't think there was much more that Adeyemi could give. But, you know, at the end of the day, they completely neutralized PSG's entire attack. And I think there was one point between the 66th minute maybe and like 78th where Mbappe didn't have the ball once. And that is remarkable. The fact that your best player, isn't anywhere near the ball. You can make the argument maybe that your top strikers, that is part of it, right? And then they can pop up out of nowhere and create this magical moment. You would never see that from a Harry Kane at Bayern Munich or Robert Lewandowski at Bayern Munich. Niklas Füllkrug, you know, didn't have a single shot on goal really today, I think. But, you know, the shift that he put in was remarkable. There wasn't a single player at Borussia Dortmund who was not doing his job or trying to put in the shift or getting the ball at some point, right? And I think that is just a difference. I mean, this PSG team is the Harlem Globetrotters of soccer. And that is a problem. And, you know, this game showed it. I mean, let's be honest here. As great as the Dortmund run is, they're fifth in the Bundesliga. And they've walked past this PSG team. And that is great for Dortmund, and we have to applaud them, and it's a wonder it can turn around a season that has otherwise been terrible for them, and it can send Marco Reus away with off into the sunset with a Champions League trophy. He can parade that around when he inevitably joins an MLS team next year, right? And they can sign him as a Champions League winner. But at the end of the day, this is a team that's currently fifth in the Bundesliga, and I just think that is so very remarkable that we're talking about this now.
Yeah, we definitely have to address the fact that Dortmund are absolutely pants in the Bundesliga, but are now in a Champions League final, and it is an absolutely remarkable achievement and quite a phenomenon. I don't know if phenomenon is a word, but kind of, it's like something from the Twilight Zone or X-Files or something, you know, it's crazy. And there are kind of reasons behind it, and I guess we can try to explain it. I mean, it's important. Not that we would ever sit here and pretend that we knew this was happening, and obviously we have been some of Terzic's biggest critics. I don't mind admitting that myself, but there's obviously, you know, a degree of this team and these tactics and this head coach suiting the Champions League where it doesn't suit the Bundesliga. We've talked about this quite a lot in the show, the fact that not only is Terzic more clearly more suited to playing defensive counter-attacking football, which is what he has enjoyed throughout his kind of young coaching career. He's made that clear, that's the kind of style of football that he likes to play. When he came to Dortmund, he said something, I can't remember what he said. He said something like, we'll try to win, but it won't always be sexy. I can't remember the way he puts it, but he was quite open about that, saying, look, I'm not here to try and be the next Jurgen Klopp. That's what the last five or six guys tried to do. I'm not even going to try. I'm going to try and win it the way that I can win it. And that hasn't worked in the Bundesliga, but and it has worked in the Champions League. And I think that's down to A, the tactics, but also just the squad that he has. I made this point a full time on social media, but, you know, it can't be a coincidence that this is the first time Dortmund haven't had a single or maybe even two future global stars in their team that hoover up all the attention, who suck up all the oxygen, hog the limelight. You know, obviously we had Jude Bellingham, and then before that Haaland, and before that, you know, Pulisic, and then Aubameyang and Kagawa and Mario Götze, blah blah blah, goes on and on and on and on. This is the first Dortmund team in some time that doesn't have that. And in the heart of it, it's got Marcel Sabitzer, a player who's desperately trying to get his career back on track. Emre Can, a player who, you know, okay, you can argue about his pros and cons, but a player who obviously tries. And Julian Brandt, a player who has been quietly kind of putting in a shift for Dortmund for years. On either wing, you've got Adeyemi and Jadon Sancho, two players who are also trying to get their careers back on track one way or another. Jadon Sancho, as we all know, very high-profile player, but spent the last 2 or 3 months more or less in football rehab at Dortmund. On the other wing, you've got Adeyemi, and we talked about this after the first leg, that Terzic has more or less turned him into like a defensive midfielder. You know, up front, you've got Füllkrug, a kind of Bundesliga journeyman who would have probably never in his wildest dreams would have thought he'd be potentially about to start a Champions League final. And you can even go all the way through that defence as well. Yes, there are some great players in there, don't get me wrong. Schlotterbeck could become a great player. Gregor Kobel is probably already a great goalkeeper. But it's a team that's full of hard-working players who feel they have to prove a point rather than what Dortmund have been in the post-Klopp era, which is a club that facilitates young players on their way to playing for clubs that reach Champions League finals, you know. And I think that's it's almost like the stars have realigned for Terzic's season, in the sense that, not to say that this team wouldn't have got here with Bellingham in the team or with Haaland up front or Pulisic on the wing or something, but it just kind of feels like there's a maturity about them. The age is maybe increased. They're not this kind of kindergarten crash team of Dortmund anymore. They are these kind of chiseled veterans of the Bundesliga, of European football, or whatever you want to call it. And that means when Terzic says, we're going to play defensive football, it's not going to be exciting, you're going to run yourself into the ground for 60 minutes and then someone's going to come on for you as a substitute. Guys like Sabitzer probably more than happy to do that. Whereas if this team was full of two or three kind of, you know, future Ballon d'Or winners, they might say, well, that's not really my jam. I'm not here to be a workhorse. So, you know, we'll probably pour over all this as the weeks and months go on and how the season plays out. But I just don't think it's a coincidence that this is the first Dortmund team in so long that doesn't have a star player, and they've suddenly managed to work their way to a Champions League final playing defensive football.
I think there's also, maybe to add to this as well, right, the other aspect about this is that for a lot of those players, it's the last chance to win something. We've talked about Marco Reus, and, you know, with him it's official. He is going to leave the club. Mats Hummels, I think he's extended his contract, he's going to stay, but let's be honest here, this is probably his last chance as well to win the Champions League trophy, because, you know, he didn't win it. He was in the final 2013, and then he left Bayern just before Bayern returned to the final, right? So he missed this opportunity to win the Champions League, and I guess he's a world champion, but, you know, like, on a club level, the Champions League is the biggest trophy you can win. And so this is the last, that's his last opportunity. You can say the same about Emre Can. I'm pretty sure Emre Can missed the Liverpool times where they won the Champions League, right? So that's his last opportunity as well. And that is, I think, a little bit fascinating because it gets almost this like last dance kind of vibes going, right? You have a bunch of grizzled veterans being within a shout now of winning the biggest trophy there is in club football. If Marco Reus wins the Champions League, Stefan, we will look at his career in a very different way. If he wins the Champions League with his final game at Borussia Dortmund, we're not going to talk about the in Germany say the unvollendete, the not quite complete, right? He will be the vollendete, the complete. It would be complete. The story would be, it would be finished. There wouldn't be a reason for him to stay. I mean, you could even say the same about Mats Hummels. Like, why would you even continue after this, right? And that's, I think, is an aspect that you cannot underestimate. If you're facing a bunch of guys that know after 90 minutes, that's it. You win this, you're the hero. You lose this, you walk into the sunset with nothing. That is an aspect that whether it's Real Madrid or Bayern Munich in the final, that is something that you cannot underestimate. And I think that is hugely fascinating. I was saying to my dad, because he's like, oh yeah, and like Bayern Munich, they're going to reach to the final. And I'm like, I don't think it matters who's going to reach the final. I just feel Dortmund is going to win this thing. And I know in the chat I've said this for a while. It's a gut feeling that I've been having for a while. It just feels weird. But I don't know why I think that. But I just think that they're going to win this thing.
I mean, you could definitely say that regardless of who they play in the final, they'll be the team who want it more. And I know that's maybe an unfair thing to suggest, but they'll either come up against a Real Madrid team full of Champions League winners, or they'll come up against a Bayern Munich team full of Champions League winners. So, you know, logic only suggests that Dortmund's hunger for the trophy will be larger. Whether that's enough to win the individual game, who knows? But yeah, I mean, on Marco Reus, we actually talked about this obviously in the main show and the kind of lovely tribute that he got at the Westfalenstadion at the weekend. And I mean, I would actually go so far as to say he's already a hero now that he's got helped this team get to the final. I think the way the Dortmund fans obviously kind of cherish the players who make an effort and play for the logo or for the club emblem on their chest, then, you know, every single player who's played in this Champions League campaign deserves that kind of credit, because this is not a football club that routinely reaches the Champions League. I think you said before about the start of recording, it's the third time in their history. But, and of course, people, and we talked about this as well, I think last week, saying, you know, people who maybe don't follow German football will think, well, I remember them playing in a Champions League final against Bayern not that long ago, so maybe it's not that hard. But you have to remember that since that final, more or less, Dortmund have struggled to even get out of the last 16. They've struggled to even get out of their group under successive managers or head coaches. They're a club that, in European terms, have been kind of lost in the wilderness for a number of years now. And yeah, I have to just keep going back to Edin Terzic to pay him credit for this, because, you know, he's not just some guy who they've plucked from some coaching academy somewhere. He's not some up-and-coming head coach from Gladbach or Mainz or something that they've thought, we'll give this guy a go. This guy is Dortmund through and through. He's a Dortmund head coach. He's came through as a, you know, through the coaching academy at the club. He's also been in the yellow wall watching these Champions League games. And he would have known and seen firsthand head coaches one after the other play naive attacking football in the Champions League and watch Dortmund get pulled apart by better sides. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he's not also going to admit any of this now, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do go on and win the Champions League and one day he's giving interviews or telling the story of his career, he'll look back and say, you know, I grew up a Dortmund fan watching them get pulled apart trying to play attacking football, so I tried to do something different and it worked. So again, it all just kind of feels quite magical. It feels like the stars were aligned in so many different ways. But yeah, what a magical moment for Dortmund, what a magical moment for German football. And it means that regardless if we reach the final, it'd be great if it's obviously Bayern Munich, but just to have one German team already in the final means that it's going to make for a fantastic game of football.
I think it is going to be Bayern. Again, gut feeling, but I leaned myself out of the window like earlier this in the semi-final, in the quarterfinals, when we had to pre-record a show, and both you and I said it was going to be Bayern after the first leg in London against Arsenal. Right, we had to pre-record the show, and I'm going to do it again. I think it's going to be Bayern. Obviously, Real Madrid is the most difficult of all opponents. They're like the, you know, like Super Mario, you had like the boss at the end of the level and you had to beat him and it was like extremely difficult. That's Real Madrid. they're like the end boss of like a Nintendo game. That's what Real Madrid is in the Champions League. Even Manchester City, you know, couldn't get past them. But I don't know. There's just something about this Champions League season and where both those teams are, right? They're both in a weird place that they've almost given up on the Bundesliga a while ago and put all this focus on the Champions League. And that's actually, you know what? I was thinking quite a bit about this today during the game, because PSG got the weekend off, right? By the way, which I think something needs to be done about that certain football federations can just give their club teams a weekend off and on a club, like, you wouldn't see that in England or Germany, but you see it sometimes in Spain, you see it in France, Italy. They did just give a team some time off to prepare for a semi-final or final. That needs to stop. UEFA needs to put a stop to that. Like, that's just not fair. And then I thought, okay, that's not fair. That's really not great that UEFA is allowing this. And then I thought to myself, is it a benefit though? Because you see that in other sports, you know, especially like North American sports where they have long playoff series, like best of seven series. And oftentimes the team that's waiting for the other team to finish a series is then the team that goes out, because the other team just goes straight from playing games to keep playing while the other team actually had that period of rest, put the legs up, got a little bit too relaxed, right? The focus is gone. And maybe that was a factor here as well, that maybe having that extra time off actually didn't help PSG. Having said all that, Dortmund got the weekend off because they played against Augsburg with the second team and of course ended up winning 5-1 because that's Dortmund. But I do think that is an interesting thing here. What I was going to say is that it is just such an interesting moment because of where German football is, because we're in this strange place where we could send two teams to a final in England, you know, the epicenter of club football, or the self-proclaimed epicenter of club football, and the two teams that we're sending are nowhere near the two best teams in the Bundesliga.
it is fascinating. You know, it's kind of, I think I've mentioned this on the show recently, in the sense that at this point in the season, Bayern are usually in a quarterfinal or semi-final of a Champions League, and they're at the point where they can start taking their foot off the gas in the Bundesliga, but that's usually because they've already won it. Not because they're already been, you know, they're 15, 20 points behind and already given up. But yeah, it's fascinating. And I mean, what a great season for German football. You know, there's still so much left to play for this week. So I don't want to really kind of rattle on about Bayern and Leverkusen. But yeah, Dortmund have kind of started what could be a fantastic week for German football. And we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. Today was great. Even Matthias Sammer was lost for words on Amazon Prime after the match, watching it here in Germany. So yeah, it is fantastic. I just want to say one more thing, Stefan. So I made a bet with our co-worker Ewan, and he's refusing to pay. So shout out to Ewan. He definitely said that PSG were going to smash Dortmund. I said they wouldn't, and we bet beer. And now he wants to chicken out. So shame on him.
Yeah, well, I'm almost certain he doesn't listen to this podcast. So you'll have to chase him in the office next time you see him.
Send it to him.
Yeah. Maybe you can tackle him at this Transfermarkt summer party. You can
we're
grab
gonna
him there.
We're going to put his tag on Twitter, on the show notes, so people can go rattle him. It had to be said. Anyways, I think that's pretty much everything that we need to say about this game. Fantastic performance by Borussia Dortmund. Well deserved in the final. And I guess we'll find out tomorrow who's going to join them there. Hopefully it will be Bayern. If not, Real Madrid, of course, has lots of German players as well. So either way, it's going to be great. We'll be back right after that game with another show. And I think we're going to do something after the Leverkusen game as well. So stay tuned for all of that. And yeah, that's it from us today. Until next time, auf Wiedersehen.